TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Why indeed did the World Trade Center buildings collapse? Professor Stephen E. Jones is challenging the official version that jet-fueled fires brought down the World Trade Center buildings on 9/11 and is calling for an independent investigation. Stephen Jones is professor of physics in the Department of Physics and Astronomy at Brigham Young University in Utah. Professor Jones is not the only one who takes issue with the official reports. A group of scientists and engineers has formed an organization that is collating materials and research on the building collapses, and Professor Jones is quoting from their work as well. The organization formed when NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, came up with their final report on the World Trade Center collapse at the end of 2005. Scientists and engineers say they can't make sense of the NIST report and are beginning to ask questions and speak up. In the first part of this one-hour speech, Professor Jones had gone over the details of the melting point of steel and the maximum heat released from an open jet fuel fire. He is now exploring alternative explanations for the collapse of the Twin Towers and Building 7. Observers and scientists are saying that all World Trade Center buildings exhibit the telltale signs of controlled demolition via the use of explosives. The perfectly symmetrical and quick collapse of the three buildings, neatly into their footprints, at freefall speeds, the pools of molten metal that still glowed red-hot when found in the rubble, and the reports of firefighters who heard explosions are all of great concern. Video footage also shows plumes of gas and debris shooting out horizontally or even upward from the buildings. These so-called squibs also occur in controlled demolitions and can be seen as a sign of explosive charges going off. In this talk, held in February of 2006 at Utah Valley State College, Professor Stephen Jones discussed the kind of explosives that some scientists believe may have been used. Professor Jones begins this part of his talk with a statement made to the New Scientist immediately after 9/11.
Here's a demolition expert, and he says, this is published in the New Scientist the day after on September 12th, it looked like a classic controlled demolition. It's Mike Taylor, demolition contractors. If there's anything good about it, it's good the towers did not weaken to one side. They would have toppled onto other buildings. That's what you expect from uncontrolled demolition. You know, this again is the law of physics, the law of increasing entropy or disorder. You expect it to topple over. However, the collapse of the towers mirrored the strategy used by demolition experts. In controlled demolitions, explosives are placed not just on the lowest three floors, but also at the higher floors, on several consecutive floors. The explosions at the higher floors enable the collapse to gain downward momentum as gravity pulls the full weight of the unsupported higher floors into the lower floors like a snowballing effect. It's actually pancaking, but where you've pulled the material out of the way below. It cascaded down like an implosion. There's that word again. You'll see squibs. These are plumes of gas and debris coming off. An explosion causes those plumes. You see these plumes, and if you look closely, there's substantial debris in there. And I had a civil engineer who was otherwise very skeptical of my paper. He said, that really does look suspicious, this plume coming off here. This is Building 7 now. You'll see the plumes smaller, and they're going up, not down. Which is significant. See how quickly they go up? Now, if it's collapsing floors, making up air pressure, that should go down, not up. Testimony from firefighters reporting explosions And it was on the lower level of the building, not just the upper. Here's the expert, building fire expert, saying, an editor-in-chief of fire engineering, look, we got to stop destroying the evidence. He's complaining about the structural steel that has been and continues to be cut up and sold for scrap. Crucial evidence that could answer many questions, which we all, or at least many of us, want to answer. Apparently some don't. But the destruction of evidence shows the astounding ignorance. This guy tends to write rather boldly. He was upset. Shows the astounding ignorance of government officials to the value of a thorough scientific investigation. Finds nothing to justify this behavior. The destruction and removal of evidence must stop immediately. And then he calls for a thorough investigation. Okay, now I would like to talk about thermite, one of my favorite topics, not everybody. This is a demonstration, University in California, with thermite. The reaction is iron oxide, rust, plus aluminum, powdered aluminum. This didn't have sulfur, but if you put sulfur in, it cuts through steel faster. And you see the white-hot steel now. This reaches temperatures hot enough to evaporate steel. Does that sound familiar? Remember, evaporated steel was seen in the rubble pile? It certainly looks like thermite, but there's more. There was molten metal found beneath both towers and Building 7. Now, the temperature, according to Eager and others, in these fires is about 650 centigrade. To melt steel requires 1,500. Thermite gets you up well past that, 2,500. And as you look at the molten stuff being pulled out of the, we have photographs and so on of this, but you see that you've got this yellow hot stuff, metal. Now, the color of the metal tells you the temperature. It's physics, independent of the metal. So this has to be something that can hold together even when it's salmon and yellow hot. Well, what is that? Structural steel can handle that, you know, lemon and salmon temperatures, no problem. Aluminum melts at 660. If this had been aluminum, it would just be liquid. It can't be solid at those temperatures. I've had people say, well, it's just aluminum from the planes. Well, I'm sorry, there's molten metal beneath Building 7, and there was no plane there. Okay, so explosive specialist, I have read your paper concerning the tower's collapse and agree military thermite, which is the type with sulfur as an accelerant to make it cut through steel much faster, is the only explanation for the molten slag found weeks after the collapse. This is Professor Barnett again. He's a good guy out in Massachusetts. He said, look, we found this steel under Building 7, and it's got sulfidation, means sulfur attacked the steel, which it does. Where'd the sulfur come from? Good question. Used in conjunction with thermite, it's called thermate. It's a military form, and it's used to cut through steel rapidly. Hot spots in the rubble corroborate the reports of the deep-down molten metal. This is, let me just say, this is the red color, and then this is Building 7. The red-orange implies these very high temperatures. This is 5 days after 9/11. We're putting out these puzzle pieces, you know. Molten metal at the bottom of the both towers and Building 7. And it rusty when you look at the slag. The collapse of Building 7, straight down. The rapid collapse of Building 7. The fact that the fires were not hot enough. You know, we're trying to put these pieces together and figure it out. Here's another one of these puzzle pieces. There is an explosion at the base of the building. This is Building 2. White smoke from the bottom. White smoke, again, consistent with thermite. Now here's another puzzle piece. I mentioned this briefly. The towers were old and loaded with asbestos. There was much discussion of how we're going to get this asbestos out of the towers or take the towers down. It was prohibitively expensive. The owner / leaseholder of these buildings insured these buildings, the World Trade Center buildings, against terrorist attack less than 2 months before 9/11. He did receive an estimated over $4 billion in insurance payment. Now, the cleanup was out of our money. taxpayers. The building of these buildings, it looks like, will be largely funded by taxpayers' money. This guy has pocketed a fair piece of change. And I would ask a few questions, you know, if I were in a position to do so. I am asking the questions. I just thought I'm, you know, not in a position to get answers under oath. Okay, anyway, it takes weeks to plan. You should know that. Not a lot of explosives, 3,000 pounds per building, but it takes weeks to plan to bring a building down like this and to plant explosives to get a building to come down in this way. Who could pull it off with the CIA, FBI, and DOD in the highly secure building? So questions naturally arise whether this was an inside job. It doesn't look like the hijackers brought the buildings down. That's what I said in my original paper. And that's just science. I mean, it's just almost inescapable. I don't see any way out of it. Scott Forbes wrote that on the weekend just prior to 9/11, there was a power down condition in Tower 2, the South Tower, for approximately 36 hours. Ben Fountain says, over the past few weeks, we've been evacuated a number of times from the World Trade Center South Tower, which is unusual. I think they had an inkling that something was going on. I suspect he's right. MIT professor, though, wrote me, I agree wholeheartedly with one comment, talking about my paper, that the official inquiries are grossly inadequate and the conclusion may well be wrong.
You are listening to Talk by Professor Stephen Jones. He's part of a group of scholars and engineers who challenged the official story of the collapse of the three World Trade Center buildings. Professor Jones now turns to the issue of toxic dust that covered much of Lower Manhattan and hung in the air for weeks. The collapse of the buildings was also an environmental catastrophe that has sickened countless people, had demonstrable effects on children born to mothers who lived near Ground Zero, and will probably kill or have long-term health effects on thousands of people who were exposed to the toxic dust. As of April 2006, 22 rescue workers have died at a young age of respiratory diseases and brain cancer. Families and professional organizations see a connection to the toxic dust at the World Trade Center site. Why were rescue workers allowed to work on the highly toxic site without adequate protection? Here is Professor Stephen Jones.
The toxic dust is next. Immediately following the tragedy, scientists analyzed the dust samples. And it's loaded with asbestos, the dust, heavy metals, mercury in particular, from all the fluorescent lights in those buildings, is loaded with mercury, and a very high alkalinity. Now let's see what that means. One of the scientists, Greg Swayze, says tests revealed the dust to be extremely alkaline, a pH of 12, and that some of it was as caustic as liquid drain cleaner. We were startled at the pH level we were finding. We knew it was caustic, but we were getting pH readings of 12 and higher. It was obvious that precautions had to be taken to protect the workers and people from this dust. This information was sent right quickly to the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, and other health services. Now, what happened? Here we see a report by EPA Inspector General Nikki Tinsley. Here's what happened. I'm just going to read this. It was in the newspapers. You might have seen it. This is from a Seattle Post-Intelligencer report. At the White House's direction, the EPA gave New Yorkers misleading assurances that there was no health risk from the debris-laden air after the World Trade Center collapse, according to an internal inquiry. The White House, quote, and this is quoting from Tinsley's report, convinced EPA to add reassuring statements and delete cautionary ones. Now, folks, this makes me upset a bit. As a scientist, to see politicians take perfectly good scientific data, this is very hazardous, toxic stuff, we've got precautions, and to flip that upside down and say it's safe, That is just wrong. It's unethical. And it is, I mean, I can't call it anything else, but, okay, I'll use the scientific term, data falsification. Okay, that's the scientific term. However, what they explained was that at that time, all statements to the media should be cleared first by the National Security Council, which is Bush's main forum for matters. Senior aides in his cabinet are on this council. I'd like to know who pushed for this data falsification. A little more. Inspector General found the EPA was persuaded to omit guidance for cleaning. See, originally the EPA had a statement saying, well, here's what you have to do. It's dangerous stuff. Guidance for cleaning spaces, tips on potential health effects from this dust, which contains asbestos, lead, glass fibers. You can see the chips of glass, even in that lady's apartment, in this stuff. There have been people now who've died. You may have noticed this. It was just a few weeks ago now. This is in the news again. A man, a police officer who helped clean up, retired, he developed black lung disease, expected from the toxicity and caustic nature of the dust, and mercury on the brain. And mercury is mercury in the dust. Now, that combination says very clearly, this is the dust, and he's there breathing this. He worked, 470 hours in the first month helping people, rescue and recovery. He gave his life to help people, and he was told it was safe. Some of these rescue workers were asked not to wear dust masks because it might frighten people. This is very bad stuff. A majority of residents and Ground Zero workers have reported worsening respiratory problems in the years since the attacks. Tim Keller died also at the age of 41. They shouldn't have said it's safe. So here's where they're saying it's safe. I'm quoting from the EPA press releases directly, and this is the ones that went out to the public, not the initial one that's had cautionary warnings, but the ones that went to the public. And again, what was it? 5 times in 10 days after 9/11, saying this is safe. Our tests show that it is safe for New Yorkers to go back to work in New York Financial District. This was obviously one of the prime concerns of politicians. We want to get the Financial District going again. EPA Administrator Christy Whitman, who has since resigned, announced that the results, air and drinking water monitoring, indicate these vital resources are safe. And then we have a scientist, though, and I'm proud of this man, Thomas Cahill, UC Davis, said, look, we felt based on the measurements that we had made a mile away from the site that the materials coming off of the hot collapse pile, there's again that heat, were much more dangerous, in fact, than we had been generally led to believe. Yes, much more dangerous. It's certainly not safe. And, of course, they've been hit with a lawsuit for unnecessarily exposed to potentially hazardous levels of asbestos and other carcinogens and toxic substances. The lawsuit accuses EPA of a shockingly deliberate indifference to human health. Again, that bothers me. I don't like it when they falsify data. I'm trying not to say lie. Okay. I'm trying to say data falsification. Okay. Why? Because, I don't know, people don't like it when you say the government lied to you. And Nikki Tinsley, the one who said the dust was toxic, she was also criticized for her report by the administration. Okay. I asked students about this. I have a class. We're talking about science and ethics, obviously. This is a topic that I raised to them because it's an ethical question and relates to science as well. Here's what the students responded to me. I have them send me emails. The public should definitely have been warned about the dust, but what would happen if they were? This could have caused a major impediment in the rebound of the economy. Very practical person. I guess it's just a question of what is more important to those in authority. Is it right to sacrifice some lives for the national good? A student asks. In this context, my point of view is that honesty is the best thing for the people. And here's the student last at the bottom here. I've been thinking a lot about this, she wrote. Our political leaders basically have our lives in their hands. I've been paying more attention to the news, and I think that I will actually take the time to vote next time. Yes, yes. Okay, that's good. Pay attention to the news, and do your own research, too. Go a little deeper than just what you get in these news releases, and then vote. Yeah. Now, another one I hit. If the administration said this dust was safe, it's okay. Only liberals or Democrats would complain. Okay. Look, these issues transcend party politics. I'm not talking about Democrat, Republican, whatever. I'm talking about people's lives here. Okay? It was unethical to deceive people in this way, but surely it was an isolated case. I wish that were so. It's not an isolated case. Okay, now here's a question. In order to achieve the most noble achievements, the leader may have to enter into evil. This is the chilling insight that has made Machiavelli so feared, admired, and challenging. I don't admire this thought at all. Paul says it's wrong. You can look in Romans. Paul talks about overcoming evil with good. Jesus talks about doing good, that good may come. We don't do evil, that good may come. Where do you stop if you take that philosophy? Where do you draw the line? I agree with Paul. We stay on the Lord's side of the line, and we do good, whether we believe in God or not. We know we don't lie to people and hurt them. Okay, here's some more. FEMA was Johnny on the spot on 9/11. How did that happen? Remember, after Katrina, they were slow. But on 9/11, they were right there. In fact, they were there the day before. As that's true. And it was admitted by Mayor Giuliani. He says, on September 12th, this pier was going to have a drill. So the people gathered on the 10th. You see, and this guy was one of the drill. We arrived late Monday night on the 10th and, of course, went into action on the 11th. It had hundreds of people here from FEMA and so on. They were ready for a drill on the 12th, but they came in. Of course, the equipment was already there also on the 10th. Now, that to me is a bit suspicious. In Manhattan, folks, downtown New York, we're not talking about, you know, the drill was at the right time in the right place the day before. And finally, I'd like to point out the United States Constitution provides for defense, not wars of aggression, when we haven't even been attacked by Iraq. And the core principles of the Constitution are limited, balanced government, reserving powers and rights to the states and the people. Protection of inalienable rights are given by God, not the government. Constitution provides for a common defense. I think we need to question wars of aggression. I've noticed that there are sword rattling relative to Iran lately. Fox seems to be giving various reasons for this. But I don't think that we should attack Iran if they haven't attacked us. I don't believe in preemptive war. I believe this is a very dangerous an oppressive policy. It's contrary to international law. It was never the policy of the United States until the Bush Doctrine, which was, enunciated in 2002. Well, actually, you find it in the neoconservatives' writings before that. They wanted this preemptive war. We've got it. I think it's illegal. We need to get back to the rule of the Constitution and law. No one should break the law with impunity, including warrantless wiretapping. We have law. It allows you 72 hours to get permission. Torture. I can't understand why Vice President Cheney and the President were wanting the CIA to be able to have torture. Do we have secret prisons in Eastern Europe? Why are we talking about these things? I'm saying, whoa, what is going on? I guess there's no proof yet, but it saddens me that we've strayed so far from the Constitution, evidently. There are three branches of government, not one or two. A legislative branch is charged with declaring war, not the president. The oversight investigations also are the responsibility of Congress, and I hope they will get doing it. Thank you.
That was part two of an hour-long excerpt of a speech by Professor Stephen E. Jones, Professor of Physics in the Department of Physics and Astronomy at Brigham Young University in Utah. The talk was given in February of 2006 at Utah Valley State College. You heard a standing ovation from an overflow audience. A witness to the event wrote, "A quiet, churchy-looking gentleman in a white shirt and tie walked into a packed auditorium and electrified the room like a rock star. Dr. Stephen Jones, this pious professor from the Mormon Church-owned Brigham Young University, calmly, gently, gave a simple physics lesson on the collapse of the World Trade Center buildings, the implications of which awed the audience with a sense of world historical significance and implied an indictment of the present administration so utterly devastating that it made Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11 look like a defense of the Bush administration. It is a devastating presentation, and one could feel the disequilibrium in the audience. The defining moment of contemporary American experience suddenly lost its definition. What is the meaning of 9/11? What really happened that day? When before have so many people been so spectacularly bamboozled with so much death and destruction and such massive implications for world politics?" End of quote. You heard part two of a one-hour excerpt from the talk given by Professor Stephen Jones that night. Take a look at the website of the Organization of Scientists Who Challenged the Official Story of 9/11 at st911.org. Scientists for Truth, st911.org. Visit TUC Radio's website at www.tucradio.org. That's TUC Radio. .org for more information on this talk. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations. Your CD or tape order is our only support and is essential in keeping us on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape or CD by mail or a credit card, by phone, or on the web. Our toll-free phone number, 877-TUC-TAPE, translates into 1-877-882-8273. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.